So Balaam finally says, yes, okay, I'll go along. And then on the way, the Lord gets mad at Balaam for going. Well, or I should say, wanted to deliver a message. And here's where the donkey saves the neck of the prophet. The donkey sees an angel standing in front of him with a sword drawn, ready to hack up the prophet. And the donkey turns to the side. Balaam beats his donkey. They go on farther. The angel appears yet again in a vineyard in a wall, and he brushes his master's foot up against the wall, and the master gets mad and beats the donkey again. And they go to another place where there's just no room to get through. And the donkey just lays flat down on his legs. If you were the owner of the donkey, you'd be frustrated too, right? And he gets up and he starts beating the donkey, and the donkey is given the opportunity to speak. And the donkey says, why are you beating me? I saved your neck. Don't you see what's right in front of you? And then all of a sudden the prophet's eyes are opened up and he sees the sword drawn in the hands of the angel of the Lord. And he says, you can go, but you can only say what I tell you to say. And every time Balaam opens his mouth, the king is expecting a curse, but he blesses them. Takes them to a different spot, same whole business. Wants him to curse them, but he blesses them. Third time, wants him to curse them, but he blesses them. You know, you kind of look at this whole thing and you'd say Balaam was a pretty faithful prophet. Until you read much later. Apparently Balaam and Balak were a little closer than you might imagine. And all of a sudden we learn that due to Balaam's urging, the people of Israel became mingled with the people of the Midianites. And they started worshiping the gods of the Midianites. In essence, they were committing a sin against the very first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. What does this mean? We should fear, love, and trust in God above all things. Even the gods of the Midianites. And so the challenge is before us a little bit this evening. It's a worthy challenge. It's a noble task for us to maybe take a good, hard look at those things which are idolatrous. I was at the seminary I started there in 1976, 77, 78. We had a guest professor from Germany. He was our systematics professor, Dr. Hans Lutz Petsch. He had wire rim glasses that strung along his face. And he was deaf in his right ear. He had driven a Panzer tank in Hitler's army on the Russian front. He had abandoned his tank and was fleeing from the Russian forces, and they were killing every German soldier they could get their hands on. And he hid in a pig pen, and they came in with pitchforks and stabbed all of the straw. But they missed him. A story he related to us in class. And eventually, he became the Lutheran Hour speaker for Germany. A man who knew the forgiveness of God. It's big. Can you imagine what life would be like for you if this man who could not speak very good English, in fact, we couldn't even ask him questions. His English was pretty good, but and he could understand us. He just couldn't speak it back fluently, and he was very embarrassed about it. So he came to class, and he'd open up his book, and he'd read his lecture for 50 minutes, and when the bell rang, shut the book and walk out, and even if he was in the middle of the sentence. All right? Just not all that confident. We begged and pleaded with him to do a little talking with us, and finally Ingo Dutzmann, a man in our class who was very fluent in German, we could ask the question, he would give the answer in German, and Ingo would translate for us. That's how we got through systematics one. Dr. Petch walks up to me one day, points his finger at me, and he says, "Mr. Brandt, what is sin?" I felt like if I didn't give the right answer, that something very bad was going to happen.